Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the latest Hawks Talk podcast. I'm Pat Boyle from CSN, joined by Tracy Myers and Charlie Meliotis from CSNChicago.com. Good to see you guys. How's everyone doing?
Yeah, good. Welcome back.
We're almost
We went a week hiatus.
I know, we did. We did. We took the fourth off. And before we get into, our projections for the lines, of course, I need to tell everybody that Vivid Seats is your one-stop shopping for all Chicago sporting event tickets this summer, as well as concerts, theater, and a whole lot more. Visit VividSeats.com to grab your tickets today. All right, next week we have the Hawks Prospects Camp at Johnny's. We'll get our first live look at the newest draftees and prospects like Alex DeBrincat. I think a lot of us will be focused on just what he has and does he stand out amongst the prospect group. But let's start with the lines and the roster as we currently see it. I think we would all agree that the front runners for the top line will be Brandon Saad, Taves, and Richard Panik.
Yeah.
But Panik is—he's not a lock to be up there, but it certainly I think it would be probably smart to see him up there and get the first crack to be with Saad and Dave.
He's probably lasted the longest there over the last two seasons.
Oh, no question.
I think that's safest to say. He's a guy who's not afraid to go to the net. I think he's earned the opportunity to start there, no doubt.
Yeah, for sure. I think he'll start there. But the question is, what happens if he doesn't solidify that spot within the first, couple weeks of the season? Because we thought that first line would be set from the very beginning. But now there was obviously a right wing void. And I'm sure we're going to talk about the left wing and the second line center now that Panarin's gone. So it'll be interesting. The consistency will obviously be key for Panik.
And as we all well know, Joel, that we could sit here all day and think we have the puzzle completely figured out. Three bad shifts or two bad shifts, yeah. And everything's going to be blown up. And, you could see Panik on the third or fourth line. So
totally. You
never know. Let's go to the second line, because I think that's where all the focus is. Since the Breadman was dealt, who plays left wing with Kane and Anisimov? And, boy, there's some that think, I guess if there was a surplus of centers, you'd say Schmaltz would get an opportunity there. Mm-hmm. The fact that there's not, think you put Nick back into a centerman's role, and then that opens the door for who do you see right now?
Well, when we were talking about the potential Patrick Sharp move a few weeks ago, I was one of the guys that said he's probably going to be a bottom line, bottom six kind of guy. But now, especially when you get rid of Kruger and they didn't re-sign Rasmussen, now there's... Tanner Caro is probably your third line center right now, and I don't even know who your fourth would be. Maybe Tommy Wingles, but I know Stan Bowman wanted to try him out at the wing, and he would be better off there. So I don't know. I think before I know Joel Quenneville talked at the NHL draft that he wanted to put Schmaltz on the second line with Anisimov and Kane, but that was before the Kruger trade and the Sharp signing.
Right.
So I think maybe you start Sharp there, but I wouldn't get comfortable with it. I would just kind of put Sharp there for the first couple weeks, just get Schmaltz in the third line center role, or maybe anywhere on the third line, just to kind of like alleviate some of the pressure. I think that might be a route they go, but it also really depends on how Sharp, his injury, I guess it's not going to play a factor, but he was playing third line minutes in 2015.
Right.
I know they were deep, but he wasn't that top six guy during the playoffs. So
right. And let's be honest, 2015, there was still a revolving door at left wing on Kane's line there.
Yeah.
There was even somewhat of a revolving door at center until Brad Richards kind of took it over late in that season. So how do you see the left wing as you handicap it now in July?
The center is a definite concern. The only issue, which it's run deep with this team, especially now that there's no Kruger, but even with Anisimov and everything, is faceoff wins. And that is something that Schmaltz absolutely would have to work on. That was a point of weakness last year. Wouldn't be surprised if it starts with Schmaltz on that left wing, just because Quenneville said that. I'm kind of actually the reverse of what Charlie's thinking. Start with Schmaltz there, and then when you realize, oh, okay, what are we going to do at center?
Yeah.
You might move him. Maybe Hartman, possibly, too.
Sure.
You know, I mean, the one thing about Hartman is when they moved him up and down the lineup last year, with rare exception, he did pretty well no matter where they put him. Almost 20 goals last year, so I think you would have to possibly throw him as a mix, too.
Really quick, do we see Hartman as a left winger or right winger?
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of consistency that really stunted Schmaltz's growth, I think, in a little bit last year, because they put him on right wing or they put him on left wing on Taze's line, and then he was center, and then, you know, like, Hartman's been jumping back and forth, and like Sharp can play right wing too, but you could probably he played right wing in Dallas, but he's been a left winger in Chicago, so it's like
he also played center here earlier.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
he's played all three.
I liked Hartman on the left side, but I thought he excelled on both.
Mm-hmm. This team. You better be versatile. Now, the only trap I think they've got to be careful is, you know, let's not be putting guys who clearly aren't centers. I realize Patrick Sharp did it 1 year. Just don't do it. You know, Patrick Kane was a center 1 year. That was a terrible idea, too. But, you know, the versatility will pay off for a lot of these
And also, like, last year was unique for this team that we had this influx of young guys. You know, we had Hinostroza, Hartman, Mott, Caro, all those guys making the big jump to the big club. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people think, well, Alex DeBrincat looks like he would fit nicely. You know, let's pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah.
First of all, let's see him at prospects camp.
Sure.
But, you know, down the road, that might be a spot for him.
Certainly
but right not. Now, it might be a bit of a stretch.
And the other thing is, and I some people asked about him, he is more of a left wing.
Yeah.
When I talked to Chris Knobloch in the summer, he goes, listen, he was actually voted first team right wing despite playing 5 games at right wing last year. He is more of a left wing. He played center very briefly last year with Erie before they got their lineup situated, but he is a true left wing. But, yes, absolutely, tap the brakes. Let's see what he can do in the fall.
It's like Ovechkin when he got voted all-team left and right wing.
Right.
Very bizarre.
Yep.
So let's get to the third line. I mean, again, if you have – Schmaltz playing on that left side, that takes him off as a possibility of being a centerman on that the third line. So we could see Caro in that role.
Yeah.
You know, Tommy Wingles also could be in a centerman role. You brought up the great point, Trace. I mean, other than Jonathan Toews, everybody we've mentioned is a below 50% faceoff winner.
Yeah.
Which, you know, a team that prides itself on puck possession, if you're losing, I mean, that's it. We could call it a turnover. I mean, you're not going to be able to possess the puck if you're losing draws left and right.
Yeah, and that, you know, you look at, and that's why every time you lose any kind of center, and Marcus Kruger was a shade under 50% the last 2 years, too. Before he broke his wrist, he was right up there with Toews. He had worked himself up to the point where he was, I think Toews was fifth and Kruger was seventh, you know, overall with the faceoffs and everything. That's a heck of a thing to lose. You know, you looked at when they faced teams like Anaheim last year, which was a tremendous face-off team. You know, their first game after Toews' injury last year in Anaheim, my God, it was so one-sided. So, yeah, that's
that
a concern.
Brutal. Yeah. So, for me, I mean, we always talk about how good of a PK player Marcus Kruger is, but he's also been among the top five for the last, like, 3 years. And his face-offs have – a majority of his faceoffs have come in the defensive zone. So, like, now you take that away, and now who do you put there? Caro and probably. So, like, my ideal third line would be Sharp, Caro, and Hartman. And that's why I brought up the Sharp-Hartman, because then do you put, like, Sharp on the left wing and then Hartman on the right, or do you flip-flop it? Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think that would be the ideal third line, and then put Schmaltz in the second line. Like, hopefully he anchors that down with Kane. But, yeah, that's a big concern face-off-wise, especially when you're taking important draws in the defensive zone.
I think also, you know, it's going to be interesting where John Hayden ends up. You know, he moved up and down the lines a bit. If you look at maybe some fourth-line possibilities, you could see Wingles possibly centering that fourth line, or again, we mentioned Carroll in that role, either third or fourth line. Lance Boma could be on the left side. You could have Hedestroza on the left side, Hayden on the right. I mean, there's a lot of different combinations, maybe depending on who you're playing. But I think Hayden, I was talking to somebody who felt that Hayden was going to assume the role of the young guy leaders. You know, like we always talk about leaders in the room, and we know Seabrook is that, and Keith, and of course Taves, and you know, Sharpie will bring that. But, you know, there is a discrepancy between the guys that are like 10 plus years and then sure. these guys that are in their second and first and third year in the NHL. And the former Yale captain, John Hayden, might be a nice bridge for that younger group. What were your thoughts on that?
I think so, yeah. It never hurts to elect an Ivy Leaguer to a leadership role, I wouldn't think. I would think Schmaltz would also be a leader just because he's been on a national title team, but at the same time, he's so quiet.
Right.
Now, who knows? Brent Seabrook, to us, is fairly quiet, too, and then every player you talk to says he's one of the most talkative guys in the room. So it's always different how they are perceived to us and everything.
Weren't you impressed, though, with the limited conversations we had with Hayden?
Yes.
Very heady
kid.
Yeah. I mean, you could see why he was a captain. You could see why he kind of commands some respect. And I think coming in for just a handful of games before the playoffs, you know, it didn't allow him a lot of opportunity to spread his wings, so to speak. But you know, now he comes in with about a solidified role as you're going to get.
Right.
And I think it's going to be interesting to see how he grows in that role.
Yeah, the good thing about him, too, is he's not your typical rookie. Like, he's, like, built like an NHL player already. And I think he's going to be 23 years old this coming season. So he's not your, you know, Nick Schmaltz came in as, what, a 19, 20-year-old? Like, they're still trying to figure it out. Like, he's already an NHL-type player that can, you know, fill a bottom six role and try to fight for an everyday spot on the roster.
And seize the opportunity to, you know, get a photo op with Theo Epstein. I mean, that's just a smart move.
That was pretty cool to see after Theo addressed the Yale graduates, the hat that Theo wore, one of the hats he wore up on the dais, he gave to John Hayden to as a parting gift, which is probably the coolest graduation gift that he got.
Yeah. I mean, it came like, what, a few weeks after the Hawks got eliminated, too?
Yeah.
I think he had like a class, like, he's like, oh, got to go back to class Wednesday. And
right,
he was like,
right.
Oh, man.
Let's get into the cap situation. You know, the Hossa thing, we discussed it. Stan alluded to it the draft weekend that long-term IR, that they would probably shoot for doing that in season because it gives them more opportunity to make moves. And then there was even Bill Daly, there was some confusion. Can you know?
Yeah.
So basically, as it stands right now, they're right around the cap, maybe what?
They're like 35 grand.
35 grand over. Yeah. Bag of pucks and 20 sticks.
A send down, and they're good. Yeah.
So they can exceed the cap by what, 10% in the offseason? So like 7.5?
Yep.
So assuming that Hossa goes on long-term IR day one of the regular season, that means they can be, what, almost $7.5 million over?
Once the season begins, they have to be at or under.
Compliant, right.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, obviously the 5.3 of Hossa, they need to be somewhere in that vicinity.
Yeah.
They could probably exceed that right now, right? And
yeah.
And then what would they do like day one? Is it just a quick transaction, or do they have to remove, you know, X million players and ship them to Rockford and then move Hossa down?
See, that's what I'm wondering. I'm thinking, I believe, I've written this so many times, you think I would have it memorized. Believe day one of the season, they have to have Jose, if they're doing it in season, they have to have him on the roster. So they have to count him against the cap day one.
Day one.
Then day two, if they choose to put him on LTIR, then you have that space over the cap that you can spend. If I'm wrong, just please start shaking your head.
No, you're right.
Correct me. So then they would have that wiggle room to do what they needed to do. And in that effect, it's almost like when Kane was put on LTIR, when they were able to go out and get Antoine Vermette.
Right.
Now, in that particular case, you know, they were so up against the regular season. Once they got into the playoffs, they were home free.
Right.
But, yeah, that would absolutely give them some wiggle room. My concern is regardless of how much money you have at that time, what's going to be out there if you are looking to get help, especially if you're looking to get help on defense. And I know Stan has talked in the past of, you know, maybe somebody doesn't fit in another team's plan, something like that. But, you know, what kind of player could you get at that point?
To me, is priority right now a top 4D? I think we'd all say top 4D would be the priority. Yeah. Centerman would be the second priority, right?
Correct.
Some experience, somebody good with at the faceoff circle. Do you think they're going to make another move before this season, or do you think what we see right now is pretty much, you know, augmented a little bit by some of the prospects? Basically, what we see now is what we're going to get.
Yeah, I think right now is going to be the final roster. But for me, they're 35,000 over the cap, right? And that's 22 players out of the final 23. Now, do they have to be at the I don't think they'd
they
have to be
have
at
to
23,
23,
right? What's the minimum? Do you
minimum,
know?
I believe, is 21.
One.
Yeah,
okay.
21.
So basically, they just like they're probably going to send down one of the three goaltenders, and then they'll get cap compliant.
Yeah.
So then you put Hosa on LTIR, and then you can make two call-ups or whatever. But, yeah, for the most part, I think – because I think that was the concern is whether they still need to make a move to get – but like, they don't need to get rid of anyone.
No,
it's just like – yeah, it's just a minor tweak. So, yeah, I do think – I just because we talked about the fourth line, like, there's seven guys that are all vying for three spots. So I don't know how you can add another play to the mix unless they're for sure, like, going to be a third-line role or fourth-line role for sure.
We talked a little bit about the loss of Kruger on the penalty kill, also the loss of Hosa on that PK.
And Jarmelson.
And Jarmelson.
And Oduya.
And you get Saad.
Yeah, you get Saad back, which is obviously a plus, but he can only do so much.
Right, right.
And if they are planning on reducing Jonathan Toews' PK responsibilities and letting him focus a little bit more on his offensive game or giving him the opportunity to flourish a little more on the offensive side, that's a lot of openings on this PK unit. Any ideas where they might find players to fill some of those gaps with the group that we have mentioned?
Yeah, I'm trying to think because
I mean, you take away Toews from, you know, the face-offs at the same. So like now you get rid of Kruger and Toews, and now like who's taking your draws in the defensive zone? So, like, you would probably have to cut his minutes when they're changing on the fly. But, like, when there's, like, a defensive zone draw, you have to have him out there. As far as who's going to replace, I don't know. I mean, you got to look to the bottom pair. Like, a Tommy Wingles, Lance Buma. I think he's a fourth-line grinder. Like, he'll make the sacrifices. So, yeah, I mean, Tanner Caro. Those are the...
Yeah.
Yeah,
we're so used to a set. They've had a set group.
Right.
They're there for so long, and they've lost a lot of pieces from that group. It's tough.
Let's quickly look at the defensive pairings as we see it right now. I think we all agree, even though it's not been official, Brian Campbell does not appear to be coming back by all indications. So your top pairing, is it a Seabrook-Keith reuniting on the top, or do we see a Connor Murphy jump up there with Keith? How do you see it?
I would just think with the depth or lack thereof that you have right now that you'd have to break up Keith and Seabrook. And I'm trying to think of, well, I was going to say Keith and Van Riemsdyk. He's gone too.
Yeah.
So you figure out that. I think Kempney played with Seabrook last year.
So Kempney and Seabrook could be together. That would put Keith and Connor Murphy together.
And they had good possession numbers together. So I don't – yeah, the Connor Murphy one, I just don't know if Joel Quenneville is going to want to put him up with Duncan Keith right away, just because I don't think he's more – Murphy is more of like a puck mover. I mean, he obviously he's okay defensively, but he's not Jalmerson.
Right.
Know, so.
Well, and the best part of Keith's game is always his ability to take chances, and he's always been able to take those chances, as Brendan Moore reminded me a couple years ago, because he had that great stay-at-home guy.
Right.
Like a Seabrook or a Jarmelson and everything. So, yeah, it's finding, making sure you have the responsibility to go with the Renegade side of that, too.
And then likely the third pairing would be Gustav Forsling and Jan Ruda.
Yeah, I would agree.
Boy, they're young.
Yeah, it's, it is.
And then Roosevelt is the seventh.
Gosh, yeah, Rosie, so, still back.
There's that. That's the concern. It's.
Yeah, I think he almost has to. I don't know what's out there. I don't know what even he would be willing to part with. But I mean, they are so thin defensively.
Yeah.
And you're asking a lot. Like Osterley, you know, he's had about as many minutes in the NHL as you or I have. So, yeah. To think that he could be a major factor in this defensive group, it would probably, I think, a bit of a stretch too. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he goes out and tries to supplement the defensive core with a veteran presence.
Yeah, the good news is, though, they do have a lot of I feel like they restocked their pipeline this year. Like Rockford,
yeah, that was clearly a focus.
Yeah, and they were also skeptical of giving up draft picks because it was in Chicago, and right. they won't have that problem this year. So I feel like they'll be more willing to, you know, utilize those draft picks and get back maybe a defenseman or a center.
Well, and you also have to see, you know, every now and then you have a surprise that comes out of camp. None of us expected Trevor Van Riemsdyk three years ago to come out of camp the way he did. We were all focused on Steven Johns and Adam Clendenning. Those guys on paper had the best opportunities. So, yeah, so but you're kind of hoping that happens. You don't know if it will, but they're going to need a little bit of that this year.
And maybe if Philly Paka factors into the plans too, because he's been with the organization, it seems like, forever.
Yeah, they've got
he's a right-handed
guys
shot too.
Need to make the step. Need to really make the step up now.
All right, so next week we have Prospects Camp, and then it's the convention. You guys ready?
Yeah.
poor Artemi Panarin was excited for this convention. I think that was his last tweet before he got traded. And
by the way, did you see Panarin on the mountaintop? He tweeted out a picture yesterday.
Yeah, he said he got his pants dirty.
Yeah. See, people said he didn't go to the dirty areas. Just didn't realize it was on a mountain. All right, that's going to do
it. That's a good way to close.
Better late than never.
That's going to do it for the Hawks Talk podcast. Reminder, Vivid Seats is your one-stop shopping for all Chicago sporting events this summer, as well as concerts, theater tickets, and a whole lot more. Visit VividSeats.com to grab your tickets today. And make sure you subscribe to the Hawks Talk podcast on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening to the Hawks Talk podcast, and we'll catch you next time.